first panel are former city auditors Jewel Lansing, Gary Blackmer, and LaVon Griffin-Vallade. And the second panel is Elliot Shuford, who is representing the Association of Local Government Auditors, and Dante James from the director, who is the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
I just want to say for the Guinness Book of World Records, I think this is the first time in council history we've had four current or former auditors in the same room. So it's quite an honor for this body. Colleagues, while the panel is coming up, I want to get a sense of you whether or not we could continue the next item 86, the North Northeast Community Development Initiative 5-year plan. Could we continue that to tomorrow afternoon? Does that work?
I would prefer, Mayor. I think it's unlikely we're going to be finished with this matter until 5, and that includes a discussion by council. And I just hate to hold people waiting, particularly since people may have to pick up kids at school or get home or do other things. So whatever we do, I think it would be more respectful if we just set it over for tomorrow or some other time rather than keep people hostage.
I can do tomorrow.
What time tomorrow?
2 p.m.
I can't, but that's all right.
I can make that.
You can make 2. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry about that, Commissioner Saltzman. Why don't we do that so that people don't have to stick around who are here for that item? So,
Kimberly, does that work?
Okay. Do I need a motion or anything on that, or can we just do it?
You can set it over without objection.
It's been set over till 2 p.m. tomorrow for those of you who are waiting for time certain item 86. Thank you, and I apologize for that. Sorry. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Blackmer, a resident of Portland and former Multnomah County, Portland, and Oregon State Auditor. It's truly an honor to be here with these other noteworthy city auditors, and Jewel Lansing especially deserves recognition. She set a course when she arrived in 1983 to improve Portland's services and ensure the best use of its public funds. We all followed in her footsteps on that same mission. Jewel Lansing created performance auditing in Portland and even in the Northwest, and knew the importance of a certification requirement for the city auditor and for professional audit standards for the office. For these reasons, the public has come to trust the work of the auditor. I believe you also trust the work of the auditor, and this proposed charter is expressing trust in her judgment and professionalism to carry out her administrative responsibilities. But working in this environment where the auditors dependent upon bureaus while also auditing them can be troubling. I think a story is the best way to explain the challenges faced by an auditor in Portland. Before I was an auditor, I worked for a sergeant in the Planning and Research Unit of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. He was a wise man with many years of patrol experience. He said that it was common for restaurants to offer free coffee to deputies, and he regularly stopped at one business in his district and accepted the free coffee. He said that one day he stopped a speeder and it turned out to be the restaurant owner. The owner said to him, "After all that free coffee, you're not going to write me a ticket, are you?" The sergeant said he wrote the ticket and he also regretted all that free coffee and he never took another cup of free coffee. So what's the connection to the auditor? There are times when the auditor needs to work with a bureau on an administrative matter, like purchasing or hiring. If the Bureau's rules don't make sense for the auditor's needs, should she accept the bad situation and struggle with the consequences, or should she ask for an exception? And if she asks the Bureau Director or the Commissioner in charge for an exception, what has she lost in integrity if that exception is granted? Would she ever hear, "After we granted you that exception, you're not going to write a negative audit, are you?" And could her exception come back at her publicly? And even asking for an exception and having it denied, could that ever come back on her publicly? So these are things that go through the mind of an auditor and the Bureau Director, as Auditor Hal Caballero had explained. This is an example of what the audit standards call an independence issue, or what others would call the appearance of a conflict of interest. The public expects an unfettered auditor, but Portland offers few protections from these situations. Something in city code is not enough. This charter proposal allows Portland's auditor to have transparent, professional, working relationships in both administrative and auditor matters with other bureaus and with council. I urge you to support the Auditor's Office in its mission to improve Portland through audits, the Ombudsman, and IPR. The protections in the proposed charter change can only enhance the contributions that an auditor can make to the city, and they are long overdue. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jewel Lansing, former city auditor, as you've heard by now.
Thank you for being here.
I just want to take you back a little further, back to 67, when Multnomah County passed a home rule county charter. And in that charter, there's one little sentence that it says that there shall be an auditor who does regular audits. And the reason the charter actually passed is because the incumbent auditor,
Jake O'Donnell, I think.
Oh, yeah, Jack O'Donnell. Uh-huh. Jack O'Donnell. He was said to not know the difference between a ham on rye, and it appeared before council. Mainly, they went around and counted cash in the various offices is what they did. But the way, when I went to the county, the way I was able to keep my head above water was that I had all this support from Don Clark. He said, tell them if they won't cooperate, you come to me. I'll see that they do. He was determined that that would be a worthwhile position and a worthwhile cause. It wasn't then until 1982, and the reason the change came in 1982 is because Mildred Schwab got elected, was on city council, and she's one of the most popular local government officials you'll ever find. And she took me on as her favorite project, and she was my independence, as Don Clark was at the county. Is that because Mildred was the one who would take my wishes to council, and she ran always supporting my office, and that otherwise it would have been a miserable time at the city, because as you know, it's a really high-pitched kind of environment that goes on there, and the auditor can help key that down. But that issue, the one of independence, and I heard you talking tonight also about the issue of, salaries was in there by now. Believe me, I got much less than the council members did at the city, and things have changed. But again, Don Clark, of course, as I say, was a very important person in the process. It was that there was an example there at the county that worked at the city, and it took a long time to get to the point that these amendments that are proposed get to the guts of the whole overview of how important the auditor is or is not in it. The reason the city council actually in 1982 voted to approve performance auditing is that there got to be letters to the editor from the public, and it got to be the point that it was an issue that the public would think you were trying to hide something, and that you wanted her things covered up. And when they approved, when council approved that money, there was a picture on the front page of the Oregonian, believe it or not, showing Frank Ivancy over here. He won't even look at the rest. He won't look at me. And Mildred and Margaret Strawn and Charles Jordan are all there. So it was a big day. And we got a banner headline in the Oregonian. And thank goodness the Port Oregonian has always been supportive of the audit function. And that's an important part, too. So I'm going to let LeVon talk now.
I have a proposal that we call Mary back up here after I'm done with my little speech. And we'll sing a quartet, because there's four of us. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, I'm LeVon Griffin-Vallade, former city auditor. I was recently at home, sitting in my office, minding my own business, and attempting to finish the draft of my first novel, when I received a request to weigh in on Auditor Hull Caballero's efforts to strengthen, or should I say fix, the structural deficits within the city charter that effectively impair the elected city auditor's independence. Like Jewel Lansing and Gary Blackmer, I'm also a former Multnomah County auditor. The three of us know a thing or two about the importance of a government accountability, transparency, and public stewardship. And we definitely know a thing or two about the added difficulty in achieving those goals at the City of Portland. That's among the reasons we support Auditor Hull Caballero's vision of the Office of City Auditor. I've read all of the documents provided by the Auditor's Office and viewed the recorded January 10th work session three times, actually. And here are three significant concepts that I want to pinpoint from Auditor Hull Caballero's statements that day. Independence is the cornerstone of credible oversight, and credible oversight is the cornerstone of good public sector governance. Regarding independence, the work of the Ombudsman and Independent Review Divisions will have far more success in changing the systemic flaws they encounter if their authority is cemented in the charter language that guarantees the independence of their investigative function and purpose. And yes, I know the Independent Review Division is no longer included in this effort, and apparently the Ombudsman's Office is threatened. But I believe both should be part of the charter change, and I'm deeply disappointed that IPR is no longer. Auditor Hull Caballero also suggested that it's time for the city to make a culture shift. To quote, historically, the auditor's office has been viewed as just another subordinate bureau rather than being treated as an elective office with separate and distinct responsibilities from the mayor and council. That means structural improvements are needed to make the auditor's office administratively independent from the executive branch and from the bureaucracy it oversees. So the third concept I want to pinpoint is I wholeheartedly agree that the city auditor should have the authority to hire outside counsel. The auditor's arm's length oversight role requires independence and objectivity and general good judgment. At times, the auditor might question the attorney's office assessment of what is best for Portland as an institution as opposed to what is best for the community or the overall long-term interests of the city. Such circumstances would benefit from guidance by outside legal counsel. Further, I would argue that the auditor should be granted the funding necessary to hire in-house counsel. Such legal advice is needed on many day-to-day administrative questions, particularly regarding IPR, the Ombudsman, Audit Services, and the Hearings Office, or other matters that potentially conflict with the efforts of individual bureaus and/or council members. And here's the thing, in my view, these are all changes the public deserves the right to consider. These are all changes the public might already want, even clamor for. These are also changes the public might reject. So what is the harm in simply allowing voters the right to decide whether or not these changes should be included in the city's charter? Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
I would just like to thank the panel and say that it is a thrill to have four of you in the room at the same time. And I want to also thank Ms. Lansing for the crash course in the first 150 years of Portland's politics. It came in handy.
I have one question, Mayor,
before
we lose our panel. And one of the amendments proposes to change the qualifications of the office, and I don't think we've had a chance to hear from all three of you as to your view of that. So just as succinctly as possible, could each of you just comment on the amendment that we have on the table, which would change the qualifications for the office?
So I've heard this particular office compared to the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State is a politician, is a party official, and has a, I believe Gary can help me out here, a real arm's length
relationship
with the Audit Services Division, and I do believe that Jean Patrick has mm-hmm. is a certified auditor.
Oh, no, she's not.
She's not, mm-hmm. so that's not a requirement then mm-hmm. there at all. Anyway, I think that the reason why that has become important to both the city and the county and Metro, and also to Washington County's auditor, is that there's a certain level of commitment to the traditions, not only the traditions, but the standards that are established by the GAO, and this is called the Yellow Book, and I think that was brought up at the work session, which establishes how audits should be performed and what level of independence the auditor should have, and that is a really important understanding and depth of knowledge for whoever is elected to the city auditor, or whoever is elected as Multnomah County auditor or Metro auditor, and that's a regional tradition that is highly respected and viewed very highly through the rest of the country.
Gary Blackmer again. The worst case scenario is someone who really has a political ambition, and they get elected auditor, and they start writing audits that attack your bureaus, and then they run to be a commissioner or a mayor. That is one big risk, and that was one of the considerations that was in Jewel's mind when, I mean, she can correct me if I'm wrong, when she put that certification requirement in. But there was also the expectation that the auditor would be a professional, and that it was a means of ensuring that greater credibility, which is one of the reasons why she introduced it in Multnomah County later when they asked her to come back temporarily to fill a position, and it was approved overwhelmingly by the voters. So there is an expectation that this is a person who is outside of the politics of the moment or their political career and working hard to do what they can as a professional to make government better. So that would be my quicks.
And if we didn't do that, I mean, if we don't take that amendment, and we did take the amendment to have a set time frame for the periodic audits of the department, what would that time frame be in your recommendation?
So when you say the department, do you mean audit services or the entire
office? Because obviously there's a smaller audits department we haven't really addressed here. But, you know, if we don't have robust elections, which is how each of us gets really determined whether we deserve to continue or not.
Right. Well, the same with the auditor.
Well, I can't remember the last time there was a contested race except for the open position when you won it. And so that's really not... doesn't give me a right concern that that's going to happen. If we did put a number in instead of just periodic audits, what would the number be?
I could support that, but I have not had that discussion with the auditor, Hull Caballero. As you can see, I wasn't even prepared to answer the question that Commissioner Fish asked, so I'm really not prepared to answer that one either.
I scrambled to figure out what's going on.
I guess there are so many diverse responsibilities in the auditor's office. It could be a relatively expensive review, because if you wanted a review of IPR and the ombudsman and audit services and the hearings office and council clerk, and you aren't going to find experts that are going to be able to make concrete recommendations in all those areas, because it would be 5 or 6 or 7 different reviews. So I think it's a challenge.
I'm sorry. Audit services must have a review every 3 years, peer review, and that's part of following government auditing standards. In order to meet those standards, you must have
those published.
Yes, they are. In fact, you could go to the auditor's audit services division website and find them.
Then that happens on a routine. That's
on
good.
A routine
so all
basis.
We'd be looking for is auditing of the rest of the money and functioning.
I assume that is sort of the model that Mary had in mind.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to respond to your question. It's been a troublesome question to me whether there should be these professional requirements, because you do now have to be a certified individual, and that's not an easy haul to jump. That's a big requirement. The reason I support it is because I see what the alternative would be. And when I wasn't going to run for re-election and I heard who was going to run to fill my place, it just made my blood run cold, because there are people who just wanted to get in, as Gary mentioned, that's an easy way to slip into government, and then you're there. You can be there for life, you know, really.
And I just want to say, Auditor Lansing, in light of what Commissioner Udaly said earlier, when I first ran, I read your book and outlined it. And the only difference is I sent you a copy of my outline, and you sent it back with corrections.
This is true. This is a true story.
Auditor.
Thank you.
Yeah, it does take a special sort of person, I think, to be an auditor. It's the introvert part, but also the willingness to sort of step back from your self-interest and your personal views on things. And I think that is ingrained in us, not only through our personalities, but also through the fact that we follow government auditing standards.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, can you please?
Was there another panel? There's another panel. Very good. Thank you so much for being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, members of the council. For the record, my name is Elliot Shuford. I'm here as a representative for the Association of Local Government Auditors. It's also known as ALGA. It's a professional organization of over 350 audit organizations throughout the United States and Canada.
Thank you.
We have followed the Portland City Auditor's efforts to strengthen the independence of the office and wish to express our support for the auditor's proposed charter amendment. An independent auditing function operating under professional audit standards plays a key role in effective governance and public accountability. Auditing helps ensure that citizens and elected officials can have confidence that scarce resources are protected by strong management controls and practices. The proposed charter amendment aims to ensure independence for the auditor in several ways. First, budget. ALGA's model legislation states that an auditor's budget should be submitted directly to the City Council. This aims to reduce the threat to the auditor's independence, such as potential management interference through control or manipulation of the auditor's budget. In Portland, the auditor submits the budget through a city bureau, and that's a situation that the charter amendment rightly seeks to rectify. Independence is critical because auditors may be called upon to issue reports that critique the efficiency or the effectiveness of management's programs. If auditors are not independent in areas such as budget, they may encounter pressure to avoid certain topics or to omit or change information in a report that's critical of a program. Such pressures can be particularly acute in situations where auditors must seek permission or approval for certain administrative functions from a department or a bureau that is also being audited. The proposed charter amendment would also ensure the auditor greater independence in other areas, including human resource management, procurement, and legal advice. Greater independence in these areas would assure both you as well as the public that the auditor's reports are objective, fair, and complete. We understand there may be interest in strengthening the auditor's independence through changes to Portland's code rather than amending the charter. While that option may appeal to some, it does not provide the same guarantee of structural independence for the auditor's office. Instead, we support the use of the charter amendment process to protect the independence of your city auditor and encourage you to pass a resolution toward that end. Thank you for the opportunity to address the council.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My pleasure. First time this year, so Happy New Year. I've been invited to speak just on the narrow aspect of the issue of my office, the Office of Equity and Human Rights. My name is Dante James, and its relationship with the auditor's office, and whether there's any particular concern about a loss of relationship, a loss of authority, a loss of oversight or engagement that my office may have with the auditor's office. And the short answer is that I've had the pleasure of working both with the present auditor and the previous auditor, more often than not at their engagement, reaching out to my office, and also with IPR, with the ombudsman, have been able to work collaboratively and testify here in support of several of the issues that the auditor has brought forward, or ombudsman has brought forward last year. So essentially, my office has no more authority over the auditor than I have over you. And so it's a relationship based on mutual trust and respect, as well as sometimes using my bully pulpit. And so I don't find any negative in terms of the relationship that my office will have with should this move forward and be referred. So that's kind of the short answer with this. And also, just as an FYI, or when I was working in Denver, I worked for the mayor of Denver. Before he was the mayor of Denver, I worked for him when he was the auditor. So there is no expectation or requirement for any certification, and it is very much a political office and has been a stepping stone from the auditor's office to the mayor's office for several, probably in the last 25 years. So for what that's worth.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing in your opinion?
A little bit of both. I mean, I've seen the office used sometimes as a political sword, but I've also seen the good work of the audits that are done, but it truly creates a political theater sometimes that plays out that isn't necessarily good for the outcomes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you both. Appreciate it. So with the forbearance of my colleagues, we can start with the public testimony. How many people do we currently have signed up?
We have 27.
All right, why don't we go ahead and start with that, please?
The first three, please come on up, are Sherry Solomon, Stephen Solomon, and Daniel Solomon. And they'll be followed by Peter Kwong.
Could I make a request that, just given that we are way, way over schedule, could we limit testimony to 2 minutes? And I realize that puts the burden on the people who go first, and I apologize for that, so I won't be draconian about it.
Can I just make an observation?
Yeah, please.
We have 6 or 7 amendments on the table in addition to the referral, and we're in a very compact time frame to make a decision. So I would urge us to err on the side of giving people time to the extent they are talking about the amendments as well as the main motion.
That would be fine. My concern is I think we may lose our quorum at 4:30. I know I will have to leave. I know Commissioner Fritz already has an excused absence at 4:30. I don't know where we are with the others. The alternative is we could do the 3 minutes with the understanding that we're probably not going to get through it all today. Unless, I mean, it seems we probably want the full city council here. Well, why don't we do this? Let's start with 3 minutes, and then let's see where we go. And if you could just state your name for the record and off to the races.
Hi, my name is Steve Salomon. I'm from Goose Hollow.
Thank you, sir.
My family is here today to ask for the City Council to send the auditor's proposal to the voters. We believe it's crucial for the Ombudsman's office to stay with the auditor's office and have more independence than it has now, especially since Mayor Hales made threats to the auditor's budget when he didn't like auditor's reports or the ombudsman's findings. Send this to voters to give more transparency, more ethical treatment, and fewer political power plays over an office that should be independent. The auditor and ombudsman have been very important to West Side neighborhoods where we live. The ombudsman responded to an anonymous complaint about huge financial conflicts of interest with West Quadrant Stakeholders Advisory Committee members. The West Quadrant Plan is the basis for the Central City 2035 plan that you'll be voting on. Her report found that there were enormous financial conflicts of interest by these members who promoted their own financial interests and advocated for increased heights and relaxed zoning on their own properties or properties they had financial connections to. Residents who attended West Quadrant meetings repeatedly told staff their concerns that they saw ridiculous financial conflicts during the West Quadrant process. Planning Bureau staff scornfully dismissed these concerns. This is what they scornfully dismissed. A developer on the Stakeholders Advisory Committee sent emails to staff saying, hey, you forgot to raise heights on these blocks, which lo and behold turned out to be their properties. A current Planning Commission member who was on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee had many years of paid work trying to get parking structures at Southwest 10th and Morrison redeveloped, yet still advocated for that redevelopment to be made a West Quadrant priority and claimed it was not a conflict. A developer who owns many properties in Goose Hollow advocated to remove the required residential overlay, relax zoning, and raise heights in Goose Hollow. Unsurprisingly, all of those things will dramatically increase his property values. Staff told concerned residents that these were not conflicts.
We've heard estimates that the West
Quadrant... I'm really sorry to interrupt. Could you just state your name for the record?
Sherry Salomon.
Thank you.
We've heard estimates that West Quadrant developments that will receive increased heights and relaxed zoning in favor of those conflicted SAC members if you approve the Central City 2035 plan will gain $50 to $100 million in profit from these policies. There is a lot of money at stake. Several city council members have received substantial donations from the same people who were named as having financial conflicts. Planning staff, SAC members, and the Planning Commission ignored the ombudsman's requirement that SAC members must disclose their financial conflicts. The Planning Commission voted to give increased heights and relaxed zoning to those conflicted SAC members even after hearing overwhelming testimony about residents' outrage, of which the three of us also testified, I might add. Our family testified at the Planning Commission. We were stunned to see that the deck was already stacked. It didn't matter that a third of the testimony was against these conflicts. The commission ignored the outpouring of public testimony and voted to give conflicted SAC members millions of dollars in benefits from serving on an SAC and steering policy their way. We are so grateful for the Ombudsman's Office efforts to try to fix this. But we see that the Auditor's Office should have independence and the ability to require enforcement, since city staff and the Planning Commission completely ignored the Ombudsman's requirements. Within months of the Ombudsman reports, Mayor Hales was threatening to reduce the Auditor's budget. People named as having conflicts donated to his campaign. This does not look good for democracy. We are very concerned that Commissioner Saltzman is, and apparently, one who suggested removing the Ombudsman's office from the vote to make the auditor independent. You may not know this if you do not read the Northwest Examiner, but Commissioner Saltzman owns many properties in the West Quadrant, but did not recuse himself from voting to approve the West Quadrant plan, which increased the values of his very own properties by raising heights and relaxing zoning. This surely violates ethics law. It may even be illegal, but also makes us question why he is pushing to give the Ombudsman's office less independence. Daniel, your turn.
Okay.
Name for the record, please. Thank you.
My name is Daniel Salomon, and I live in Goose Hollow.
Thank you.
We also appreciate the auditor's report on the problems with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. We agree with the auditor that any business association or nonprofit receiving city funds to promote community engagement should have oversight and ethical obligations. We have seen a business association begin in our neighborhood which is almost fully funded by our tax dollars through Venture Portland and claims to represent neighborhood businesses. But in reality, it appears to be a puppet organization for one of the developers the ombudsman identified as having a conflict on the West Quadrant SAC, S-A-C. This organization functions almost completely with our tax dollars, but has no obligation to have open meetings, open records, elections, or conflict of interest obligations for board members. They sent letters to the cities taking a stand on land use and other policy issues without ever having a meeting with their membership or board to vote on what stand they will take. This should not be funded by our tax dollars. If they want to go to the trouble of creating a puppet organization which speaks for the financial interests of only a couple of powerful people, they should do it on their own dime. The auditor's ONI audit points out these exact issues with nonprofits funded through ONI and with business associations. We hope the auditor audits Venture Portland and the Planning Commission next. We're telling you these stories so you know how much the auditor's office, including the ombudsman's office, needs independence, free from political power plays and free from the influence of powerful political donors. You can see how much independence is needed by the fact that it took an anonymous complaint to the ombudsman to get anyone in the city to care about flagrant financial conflicts of interest on the West Quadrant plan. Portland residents deserve to know that the auditor's office and the ombudsman's office can be independent of such political processes. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your testimony.
Just as a point of clarification, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement doesn't do anything with business associations. That goes to the Portland Development Commission. So there was a kind of a misunderstanding in the audit. So thank you for your testimony.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mayor, just if I could also just note that, because you raised the question, we agree that based on the Ombudsman's report, that we need to change the rules applicable to boards and commissions. As you know, historically, people were not required to fill out a disclosure form. There was no training. There were no uniform bylaws. There was no master database at the city of people who serve. We're in the process of bringing forth a package of reforms that draw from the Ombudsman's report, which will address a number of those things. So separate and apart from what we do with the independence of the auditor, those issues are being taken seriously, and we will, in the near future, have a hearing on changes to how we do boards and commissions to address the very issues you raised in your testimony. So I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The next three, please. And again, if people could just state their name for the record, that'd be helpful.
Next three are Peter Kwong, Chris Broderick, and Michael Mahaffey, and they'll be followed by Wendy Rahm, Chris Nielsen, and Tim Helzer.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Peter Kwong. I'm a certified public accountant and an audit shareholder of the Portland accounting firm Perkins & Company. The views that I will be stating today are those of my own and not necessarily those of Perkins & Company. I have audited privately held and publicly traded companies for over 20 years. A little over a year ago, I was asked to join the City Auditor's Advisory Council, and during that time, I've gained substantial knowledge about the elected city auditor and auditor's office and what their roles and responsibilities are for the City of Portland. In my experience as an auditor, the City of Portland is, in some ways, like a publicly traded company. Shareholders and publicly traded companies are individuals and investors who rely upon the statements made by management and their independent auditors. In all publicly traded companies, an internal audit function exists outside of the company's operational management. Generally, the largest blue chip public companies have internal audit functions that are fully independent of management. In large companies, the board of directors or audit committee sets the budget for both external and internal auditors to ensure that the information reported to the public and investors is materially accurate. That independence is crucial to the credibility of the auditor's work. The shareholders and the public depend on those audits. So why would this be pertinent to the City of Portland? If the public views City Council as a board of directors, similar to a publicly traded company, it would need to ensure that the information the auditor's office presents to the public is non-biased and materially accurate without any undue influence from the city departments, including the offices of Budget and Management and Finance, that the city auditor and her office are responsible for auditing. The advice and work of the city attorney's office, which represents city departments being audited, should also be kept separate from the city auditor, with the auditor being able to obtain legal advice from independent counsel. Whether we work in a company or in a city, auditors should be able to report critical findings and have the budget and support they need, especially when audits uncover findings that are critical of management. It is also important to have an elected auditor in office whose licensed or certified professionals uphold the following principles: integrity, objectivity, confidentiality, and competency, and that they have the means to do so without undue influence from others, especially from those that they audit and investigate. In my opinion, by updating and aligning the city charter to be consistent with roles and responsibilities of the auditor will help preserve the independence and the integrity of this office and the city government it audits and investigates. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Broderick. I'm also a member of the Auditor's Citizen Advisory Committee. I am a Associate Vice President of Portland State University and a former journalist at the Oregonian who has a special interest in government accountability. Our committee believes strongly that an independent auditor's office is crucial to being professional and impartial, to provide, rather, professional and impartial oversight to evaluate city operations from police to parks to public housing. An independent auditor helps you as the mayor and the city council to recommend improvements that move our community forward. The functions of the auditor's office have not been updated in the city charter for more than 2 decades, and since then, as you've heard, the responsibilities have expanded greatly, such as the creation of the ombudsman. We feel in the committee that it is important to put the ombudsman in the city charter instead of a city code, because it does not only enshrines it into the charter, but it ensures that any changes from then on will have to be made by the voters and not by 3 votes of the city council. The office should be independent from the agencies that are subject to auditor oversight. You heard that clearly from the former auditors. An independent auditor is not just the best practice, but a common practice among cities with elected auditors. An example is the budget. Under the current system, the city budget office oversees the auditor's budget, and that arrangement, I think, can shape the spending priorities of the auditor, what the auditor does or does not do. So to me, it's difficult to have an independent auditor without an independent budget process. And as for oversight, the auditor still would report to the city council and ultimately to the voters. An independent auditor enhances the credibility of Portland city government. As you know, there are past examples when the city lost credibility with the public, such as how police handled the mentally ill or the parking meter bribe scandal. An independent auditor's office grounded the city charter would boost public confidence in the ability of city government to hold itself accountable. That all said, some of you still have concerns about this proposal, and ultimately, however, I think it makes sense to let the voters weigh the pros and cons of this to decide for themselves if this is a good idea. In that way, the burden of persuasion is on the auditor as an elected official to prove to the voters that this is a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I'm Michael Mahaffey. I'm president of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association, and I submitted written remarks to you by letter, but I'd like to summarize those in oral testimony as well. And as I noted in the written remarks, the board of Goose Hollow Foothills League has unanimously voted to support the auditor's proposal. We strongly concur with the need to secure independent legal advice, create an independent budget process, and affirm the independent operations of the office, free from the fact or the appearance of undue political influence. We also strongly concur that these reforms should be embodied in a charter amendment approved by the voters, free of potential for changes by the council members who also serve as bureau executives. The issue of ethics in city government was an important campaign issue in last year's election, as you know, and rightly so, we believe. We've all seen recent evidence of disturbing lapses in ethical transparency and accountability. For example, as was alluded to earlier, the West Quadrant of Central City Neighborhoods has much to be grateful for in the work of the Ombudsman's report of 2015, finding undisclosed potential conflicts of interest in the West Quadrant Plan Stakeholder Advisory committee process, and I appreciate the efforts to deal with that process more thoroughly. We believe the last city election has provided a clear mandate to restore public confidence in the integrity of that system. And we also want to thank the auditor for making us aware of a number of issues in the recent review of Portland's Neighborhood Involvement Administration. And we believe this and other recent events point to a very important need for really thorough structural reforms leading to greater subsidiarity, transparency, and representative democracy in Portland's neighborhood involvement system. And we look forward to working with the council to address this need. And finally, may I add on a personal note, not speaking here for the board, that I really appreciate Commissioner Fritz's sharing her concerns with us about employment issues and this proposal and other aspects of that. And I hope that these issues can be addressed and this important initiative can go forward with everyone's support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Next three are Wendy Rom, Chris Nielsen, and Tim Helzer. And they'll be followed by Debbie Iona, Carol Cushman, and Dan Handelman.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Wendy Rom. I hope to explain why I think it's so important for you to approve the auditor's proposal, all of it, including incorporating it into charter and putting it to a May vote. After 27 years of test driving the current system, the flaws are known. A prominent lawyer, past auditors of Portland and of the state of Oregon and even of another major city, endorsed the proposal at the earlier work session as best practices. They all testified that the auditor's office, including the ombudsman, must have complete independence from political pressure, both in appearance and in fact. Any scent of political pressure on an audit or ombudsman process can distort the results and the public's confidence in those results. And that is where we are in Portland, with the public questioning results because of shaky processes, with some, at least, appearances, if not fact, of having been subjected to political pressures. In fact, the auditor is obliged to seek autonomy by GAO guidelines called Generally Accepted Government Auditing Standards, which specifically requires an auditor to address threats to an auditor's independence. Our auditor is responding to this higher standard. An auditor should be able to hire independent legal counsel and not be obliged to use the city attorney who is hired by city council. An auditor should be able to have some control of that office's budget without first having to get approval from another city bureau also competing for dollars and which is hired by city council. An auditor should be able to make Did it go off? No. An auditor should be able to make management decisions independent of other city bureaus which are hired by city council. Checks on the auditor exist. First, the auditor is an elected official. Also, the auditor is required to follow all HR rules outlined in federal law. And city council may play a part in contracting an independent professional audit review agency to review the auditor's office, and those results would be made public. I hope my testimony helps to lead you to do the right thing, ensure that effective checks and balances in our government are in our charter. Please vote to put this entire proposal to the voters. Thank you for letting me speak.
Wendy, just one clarification.
Yeah.
It's the auditor who would be asking for the audit of that office, not
but
the government.
My understanding is that, in fact, that proposal would be contracted or the funding would be approved by you as well.
I don't believe so, but...
No, yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Chris Nielsen. I'm here to speak to you today in support of the auditor's request to the City Council to refer to the voters of the City of Portland amendments to the City Charter to protect the auditor's independence. Portland is the city that works. Yet, in the 2016 community survey reported in November 2016, rankings of Portland as a livable city and city government's overall delivery of services have declined by double digits since 2012. performance audits conducted by the City Auditor's Office of City Bureaus in complaints invested by the Ombudsman are two ways that the performance of the city can be analyzed and improved, and that citizens such as myself can have confidence that our city government is doing the best possible job with the resources it has. My confidence is built on both the reality and the appearance of the auditor's independence, including the work of the Ombudsman, which the auditor's budget supports. The auditor works for me, just as all of you do, and for the people in this room and the people outside these doors. I would like the auditor to have both actual independence and the appearance of independence. That's the backbone of the auditor's credibility. I ask you as the City Council to give me the opportunity to vote on the charter changes that would make that so. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, there's one more. Sorry. Yes, sir.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Tim Helzer. I'm a resident of Hayden Island. I've been a resident of Portland since 1946. Our economically diverse residential and commercial community on Hayden Island is home to approximately 3,000 full-time residents and many retail and recreational interests. We are near major rail, barge, air, deep water marine, and interstate highway systems, making it very attractive for industrial development. The area is also a fragile, primarily marine-based ecological region with several thousand acres of urban wildlife habitat for a wide variety of birds, mammals, riparian creatures, fish, specialized forests, and other species assets. Portland City Council has sponsored as major investment partner the development of huge projects that would have had high economic, environmental, transit, and social impact on a major portion of Hayden Island and the city. Here are three of at least 17 such projects that would have impacted very directly the citizens and the creatures of Hayden Island. First, the City Council was a major supporter of a several billion dollar investment in the Columbia River Crossing Replacement Bridge, 22 lanes going across Hayden Island, massive environmental impact and other consequences, with little direct oversight by the city's auditor's office. More than $100 million in engineering and other costs became totally unaccounted for, whereas an independent financial fraud investigation auditor identified this massive ripoff and blew the whistle on it to the Washington State Senate. Project canceled. Next, a sprawling marine-based industrial complex was grandly proposed and aggressively promoted by the Port of Portland to Portland City Council on the 825 acres of West Hayden Island, for which there was never any proven economic need. $200 million would have gone down the drain, destroying 300 acres of natural wildlife habitat and endangering another 500. Little in-depth oversight by the city auditor's office was provided to you to avoid that kind of train wreck. Last, you are all very familiar with the Pembina propane storage and transfer operation that the city was very interested in, promoted by the city of, or by Port of Portland again. It would have employed three full-time people, and it would have exposed this city to one of the most tragic and destructive explosions ever known across any part of the United States. You have a team member in the city auditor's office that needs to be more independent, needs to be better supported financially to serve you and serve us more effectively. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all.
The next three are Debbie Iona, Carol Cushman, and Dan Handelman, and they'll be followed by Robert Wright, Chris Broderick, and Bob Tackett.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. So I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League supports the goal of Auditor Hull Caballero's proposal for administrative independence, but believes accountability safeguards need to be added. Because this is a charter amendment, there should be a very high bar for referral. We recommend that a requirement for a clear and open process for crafting the rules needed to exercise the new administrative powers be added to the charter amendment. Furthermore, those rules should be subject to a periodic review process. In our accompanying memo, we provide details and the rationale for our recommendation to add a provision G to the administrative powers section. Provision G would require administrative rulemaking procedures for developing the rules and regulations implementing those powers. Of particular importance to the League is that administrative rulemaking requires public and stakeholder participation and input. In addition to using administrative rulemaking, at least once during an auditor's four-year term, an ad hoc review committee, including stakeholders such as employees and interested members of the public, should review those administrative rules to identify possible improvements. The committee should also review the rules that govern the timeline, selection, and other elements of the auditor's use of outside expert reviewers. The League's Provision G recommendations also address the Oregonian Editorial Board's concern that, quote, increased autonomy, however, should not translate into a pass from accountability, end quote. The League fully supports providing administrative independence, but accountable use of that independence is a must. The initial rulemaking and periodic review we recommend will require capacity beyond what currently is available in the auditor's office. With that in mind, the League recommends that the auditor include in her upcoming budget the resources needed to conduct the initial administrative rulemaking. And I just want to draw your attention to this one-page thing with where we're recommending on Section 2506A under administrative authority that you delete policies and practices, because that might be a way to get around the requirement for public participation in rulemaking. And then Commissioner Fish's office sent us a copy of the proposed amendment, which is fine with us, but we also really think it's important to have that last sentence that we have in Section G that requires that every 4 year, you know, having an ad hoc committee look at the rules just to see, you know, if there's any room for improvement, and also be a good exercise for if an auditor changes every 4 years for the new auditor to, you know, become more familiar and have a good discussion about the rules that govern the way the office works.
Debbie, I'm hearing a sense that we may lose a quorum later, prevent us from acting today.
Yeah.
And therefore, it may go to next week if that's the case. If that does happen, I commit to sit down with you on the language you've proposed, you've given us, and the amendment that I crafted to see how we can harmonize them.
Sounds great. And then I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would second that as well. So their amendment is on the table as well.
Very good. So Commissioner Fish will work with you, and I will second. It sounds like you're already seconding as an amendment what we will call the League of Women Voters amendment, and we will add this to the pile along with the others for further discussion. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Carol Cushman, also representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. And we have three additional issues that we would like to address, but we wanted to give a full time to our proposed amendment. The auditor pays into the general overhead fund using an allocation process that also applies to city bureaus. Given the new administrative powers proposed in the charter amendment, several centralized services that the auditor is paying for would be used to a lesser extent. Instead, the auditor would be paying outside entities for these services. We recommend adding a provision to the resolution clarifying that the charter is committed to a future evaluation and adjustment of the general overhead fund model regarding the auditor. So not that you would worry about the money now, but let's not be double paying for some services. The League supports retaining the educational credentials for the auditor candidates. The educational credentials requirement was adopted in a 1986 charter amendment referral with an 80% yes vote. Auditors receive training and agree to abide by professional guidelines for conducting their work, which are valuable attributes for this position. Finally, the League is pleased the independent police review was removed from the proposal. We support including a